Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Let's begin. Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, June 29th, 2020. We're thrilled to have you be a part of the podcast. Excited. We've got, again, probably one of the most interesting topics, getting a glimpse into the future. But the future is here. We're going to talk about it in the Hot Topic segment. We've got Danny Tomsett here as well, who's the unique founder and CEO, worked with Alan on a major project. That's how I got to meet him and his company. And also joining him will be Tyler Merritt. Tyler's VP of the platform. I can't wait to get into talking about the digital human, how it's going to revolutionize many industries. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Be sure to share this with others, especially this podcast we're going to be doing in the Hot Topics segment. But I want to say also thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Finastra, EffusionBot, as well as Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, as well as the CMLA, where the Community Mortgage Lenders of America, the MBA, as well as Indicom, and Accelerate. Josh, a friend, has got a webinar coming up. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But Accelerate is a company that you've got to get to know. He's got a webinar, How to Retain a Customer for Life Through Modern Automation. Kind of fits in with a little bit of what we're talking about today. He's going to be doing that July 7th, that's next week, 10 a.m. Pacific Daylight Savings Time, so be sure to check it out. It is going to be getting in and talking a lot about what you can do to hold on to the customers, as well as AI Assist. I want to say thank you to them, their sponsorship. Celebrity Home Loans is a mortgage entity that's growing through acquisitions. Knowledge Coop, best LMS learning management system out there in the market, as well as a Mobility RE and Modex. Both of these companies help you recruit effectively by getting empirical data on what's going on each of the loan officers, so you get real facts on what they're actually doing and the realtors with whom they're doing business, as well as virtual electronic marketing assistant, Velma, as well as VendorSurf, Vidyard. And finally, I want to say a special thanks to Alice, Andy, Allen, and Matt for their contributions to the program each and every week. Let's get on with the podcast and start off with the MBA Mortgage Minute with Rob Van Rapphorst and this week's MBA view of what's happening.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled that the director of the CFPB could be removed by the President of the United States at will. However, the court left intact the rest of the statute that created the agency. MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith released a statement saying it believed that severing the provisions related to the independence of the CFPB's director was the appropriate remedy if the court found the Bureau's structure to be unconstitutional. Also last week, CFPB released two notices of proposed rulemaking with changes to the QM rule and extension of the GSE patch. In the first NPR, the Bureau proposed significant changes to the general QM loan definition. This included replacing the existing 43% debt-to-income ratio threshold in favor of a loan pricing threshold based on the difference between a loan's annual percentage rate and the average prime offer rate at the time the rate is set for a comparable transaction. The second NPR would extend the GSE patch's expiration date to the effective date for a final rule of the first NPR, allowing the GSE patch to continue until the revisions to the general QM standard are fully implemented. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Good job, Rob. Appreciate the MBA and all that they do for our industry. We talk about it regularly, but if you're not a member of the Mortgage Action Alliance, you need to sign up for that, and you can do so at the MBA website, Mortgage Action Alliance. You do not have to be a member of the MBA, and it allows you to have your voice heard on Capitol Hill. So let's go over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight, a macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Oh, Race, who's a rebel just for kicks now? See them kick it like it's 2006 now. Might be over now, but they feel it still. Since 2006, the 10-year yield dropped over 450 basis points. The Fed tries to stop yields from falling, but notes feel it still. Everything depends on the perception of recovery. How determine our cities, states, and countries to stay open and expand business despite the rise in COVID-19 cases? Hospitalizations matter. Jobs matter. Without the massive Fed intervention, credit spreads widen and Treasury yields drop. The Fed might control rates now, but rates feel it still. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Thank you, Les Barker, for the TM Spotlight. Matt Graham's here with us with the mortgage rate update. Matt is CEO and founder of MBS Live. He's the newest contributor to our podcast. He's doing a great job, Matt. So good to have you here. I'm back on your website again. I just got to brag before you give your report. Folks, this is consolidated everything. Take a look at this for a few dollars a month. You can be signed up and using this, and you have exactly what's going on live in the markets. And it's got so many features. And so I have become a big fan of both Matt Graham as well as his website and his service. So check it out, folks, mbslive.net. And then put in LOL, and you'll get extended, double the free time to look at the website. Check it out.
Yeah, so markets and mortgage rates and everything, things have slowed down a little bit, but in a good way over the past couple of weeks. And not a good way for coronavirus numbers, but that has translated to good things for mortgage rates, at least. And many lenders were down to their all-time lows by the end of last week. We're continuing to see that meaning vastly different things depending on your lender. Some originators see what others are quoting and happen to be a bit frustrated by that. So everybody should know there is still quite a wide variety between lenders. Sometimes as much as a quarter to 3/8 of a point. And that's going to be a way of life, I think, for a little while longer as the secondary mortgage market sorts out the crazy, unprecedented volatility created by the coronavirus reality. Les hit on a bunch of good points in his quick little hit there. And that, simply put, is that markets are very much tied to what is going to happen with this potential second wave of coronavirus cases. And it's important to know that we always hear this counterpoint of, yeah, but we're doing a bunch more testing, so that's why cases are rising. And in some cases, I think that's true, no pun intended. But the market is also looking at positive case count percentages and hospitalizations. And I like that Les said hospitalizations matter, because they do. And the better counterpoint at this point is instead to focus on the differences between states like Texas and California and states like New York and New Jersey. So they are at two completely different places on their curves, respectively. And the biggest concern would be if a state like New York or New Jersey were to have a second wave, because arguably in California, Texas, Arizona, Florida, these are more like first waves or delayed first waves. And I think that's why the market hasn't really panicked as much as it might have if it seemed like this stuff was really going to shut things down. But you are seeing markets trade that stuff out. And by trade that stuff out, I mean they're somewhere between their exuberance of early June when stocks were very high and bond yields were spiking. And they're not as low as they have been. Of course, stocks aren't as low as they were back in March. But bond yields haven't made it back to mid-April lows. So if bond yields haven't made it back to mid-April lows, why are mortgage rates at all-time lows? Mortgage rates didn't follow bond yields down as quickly or in lockstep during the initial coronavirus panic. We've talked about that a few times, but it bears repeating in case people are wondering why that is. And that left mortgage rates with a margin, with a bit of a cushion to outperform treasuries. And it's important to know that that cushion is getting smaller and smaller, back almost to a historical range. And that is going to decrease the ability of the mortgage market to outperform going forward. So if financial markets find a reason for treasury yields to rise, now we're looking at that classic scenario that is in effect 95% of the time, where mortgage rates would be following treasury yields in general. On the interesting data front, existing home sales kind of tanked last month, but it's not as much of an advanced indicator as pending home sales, which absolutely crushed it just this morning, 44% higher and in the past range. So for those who don't know, pending home sales measure contract signings, and existing home sales are actual finalized sales. So pending sales might come out a week later in the data cycle, but it's speaking to forward looking. Yeah, so pending home sales look good. New home sales look really good. And building permits, as we talked about last week, look fine. Builder confidence is fine. So I think to whatever extent quarantine measures allow people to get back to work, they want to get back to work, they want to buy homes, they want to refi homes. Refi numbers were down just slightly, but still very, very high compared to where they were. We're still refi boom territory and still near the highest purchase applications weekly in 11 and a half years. So really just waiting to find out if there is going to be a bona fide second wave, or if we are just sort of feeling out the extent to which states can ramp up their economic reopenings, trying to find that magic balance point between public health and the country's economic health, both of which are important.
There's some great information on your website. One of the ones I'm looking at right now is the market summary, and I'm looking at the ceiling floor meter. That is just overwhelming. And then I always keeping an eye on what live news streams are there. You have a partnership with CNBC, which I think is so awesome, mbslive.net, and you'll be able to get the latest news as it's happening. Man, I just love your website. It's one of those things where just the closer you look, the longer you spend time on it, the more you find yourself just staring at it. So you've got great technology and great tools all the way around. I just love it.
So much, Dave.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about Matt, go back and listen to last week's podcast. Matt was on, and we got the chance to let our listeners get to know this guy. You won't be disappointed. He's got a great sense of humor, great product, and we're thrilled to have him be a part of a regular part of the podcast. Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Matt.
Thank you.
We've got Alan Pollock here with us with the update. But before we run over to Alan, let's get over and talk about Finastra, their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution. They got a great tool. They've got over 1,400 clients that are using this. It's really an amazing product. Again, it's got a point of sale feature that is really strong, and I encourage you to check it out. Go ahead over to Finastra, Finastra.com. Appreciate you being here with us and listening. Alan, good to have you here, friend. What you got?
Good to be here as always. So a couple great things today. We're going to be talking about some awesome technology along with, it'll cycle in with chatbots and chatting and conversational AI, all that fun stuff. So we missed this on Father's Day, but there's so much out there about chatbots, David. I thought we'd start off with this. Fatherly, so we're going back 2 weeks now. Fatherly released, they call the dad bot. And it does dad jokes. So if you need dad jokes, of course, they're for the smaller crowd. You can hear things like, need an arc? I know a guy. Or what did one ocean say to the other? Nothing. They just wave. Being able to have your chatbot have humor is very important. Check it out, fatherly.com, and they've got some funny ones. All right, David, some great stuff in the news. First, Roostify has engaged Factual Data to provide access to consumer credit. So what's kind of interesting on this is credit running upfront in the process is so important because you're able to understand more about the scenario. And on our point of sale platforms, you can actually run rules and process experience based on that. So really important, if you use Roostify, that you check that out or you engage that. Second is our good friends over at Mortgage Coach and Homebot. So Homebot is a new integration that Mortgage Coach has. Homebot's not new, by the way, to our industry. If you check out their website, they've got a lot of great partnerships. They just announced an integration that allows you to easily generate refinances from your past client database. And so we've heard a lot of people talk about this, right? The ability to go back and data mine the data you already have, right? And in all industries, right? Cross sales, really important. We'll probably talk about that a little bit later today as well. Well, the fact that you can go back and look for prepayment and look for other types of scenarios where you can help your borrowers and then provide the total cost analysis that Mortgage Coach provides is really a big deal. They actually have a webinar coming up that if it hasn't already happened, you can register. Otherwise, you can view it. It's called Deep Dive Homebot and Mortgage Coach. You want to check that out. And an unofficial shout out to Mortgage Coach, just what those guys are doing is great. So there's a lot of stuff in the news going on at Mortgage Coach. You want to check it out. company I work for, OpenClose, just did a big integration with Radian. So if you use OpenClose, you want to check that out. David, this one is near and dear to one thing I really like, which is ServiceLink and their Exos platform. You remember I've talked about that quite a bit. Well, they just unveiled new technology, which allows you as the home buyer to be able to snap pictures, again, geolocation and all that fun stuff. That just makes it a lot easier. It supports home equity lending. It supports even like loss made and loan mods and in areas where you don't need a full appraisal that the borrower can actually go and snap those. So you want to check that out. We all saw in the news, this is new, David, CoreLogic. They got an unsolicited takeover bid from Kinney and Senator Investments. And today, those two organizations already own a certain percentage of CoreLogic. They offered $65 a share. So get this. What they basically say is they believe the company will not achieve its full potential under its current strategic plan, and therefore believe the proposed transaction is in its best interest of the company and its stakeholders. And they're saying that they're giving it a premium that is greater than the 26% share price appreciation that it took the company the last 5 years to accomplish. Now, I find this very unique being from the outside, because one is CoreLogic has done a lot of great acquisitions, and they've got the Mercury platform. Mercury has all kinds of valuation platforms. And so there's always something going on in another angle or another door that opens. I guess this would mean all great things to continue to enhance and expand for CoreLogic. Good news on that front. David, we love the Stratmore Report. Stratmore does some fantastic stuff. Their 2020 Technology Insight Study is now out. You want to get in touch with them. You want, if you have it, you want to fill it out. Really important that your opinion helps drive our industry. I know a lot of people do participate in that, so you want to check that out. Very interesting, David. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence today, and I wanted to just bring up a couple quick topics that will lead into that, and then we'll call it a day for my segment. The Financial Brand just had a great article. They call it Chatbots to the Rescue, How Conversational AI Will Save Call Centers. And what they basically talk about is that when the coronavirus pandemic led to widespread branch closures and restrictions, how a chatbot and different types of AI help really enhance the experience and expand what they can do for customers and eliminate phone calls and do different things like that. So you want to check that out. But also, these are some of the topics in the news today. This is how important chatbots are becoming. The rise of AI and chatbots. Sweet talking. How chatbots help banks become smarter. How chatbots are setting a new milestone in the financial sector. Are chatbots the new voice of banking? And by the way, David, important to mention, if to our tech vendor friends out there, if you have news or information that you want to share on Lickin' on Lending, give us a shout out. You can reach me, Allen, A-L-L-E-N, at TMS-advisors.com.
Perfect, yeah. I love it when people share information, things that they're learning about. Good segment. By the way, I interviewed, in fact, who's going to be our guest next week is the president and CEO of Roostify. You mentioned it earlier. So we got Rajesh Bhatt coming on next week, Roostify. Thanks for being here. And let's move on over to Andy Schell, also known as Dr. Andy Schell, the Profit Doctor. Dr. Doctor.
Hi, Dave.
I love that expression. How are you doing, Andy? Good to have you here.
Thank you, Dave. Very, very well. I wanted to comment quickly on one of the things that Matt said, sort of extending into the market's reaction to the pandemic. So I've been following the spike in Texas. So a couple of weeks ago, they opened up the bars. And what happened was, the 20-year-olds went to the bars and got infected. And so they shut the bars back down. There was a spike in hospitalizations. But as of today, positive tests are going down. And right now today, there are twice as many ventilators as there are patients. So there's room to expand, but let's not. But the lesson learned from this is 20-year-olds are reckless. Like, that's a surprise.
You were reckless at 20? Oh, you're kidding me. Yeah, that's a shock.
Frontal lobe doesn't develop until 25, exactly right. So why would we expect an 18-year-old to make a good decision? So digital touch, digital communication, this actually extends into the digital presentation of financial statements. Now, we take this for granted. I mean, rarely do we get a piece of paper with a financial statement on it. Even in a digital format, financial statements, for most people, unless you're a CPA, are hard to read. And even if you are a CPA, the complexity of mortgage lending financial statements can be daunting. It can be really, really challenging. For those who aren't CPAs, financial statements, you know, they're presented in rows and columns of numbers. And this is known as a tabular data format. The fact that it's rows and columns of numbers is hard to understand. And I'm always perplexed by this, and actually I'm studying this in my second doctorate. In this digital world that we live in, with all the digital capabilities and technology capabilities, why are we still producing financial statements that are just columns and rows?
So good.
There is definitely an accounting connection between the balance sheet, the income statement, and the statement and changes in financial positions. But that's the job of the accounting department. They should make sure that before they send stuff out, that it connects together. And the person that reads the financial statement shouldn't have to worry about if they're connected together like they're supposed to be. Also, there's among mortgage companies, there's a huge issue among intangible IRLC revenue that can be one of the most significant revenue items for a mortgage company. And it's highly distortive and difficult to understand. So let's change that. Let's just use the old adage, a picture speaks a thousand words, and turn that into the graphic visualization of financial data brings clarity and confidence to the reader. So let's just think about it. How can we make this into a graph? Here's a couple of quick examples. Let's just create graphs of some of the financial information. And I think these graphs should be part of every financial statement package for every single mortgage company in the country. There's no reason why this can't be created. And I'd start simple. A simple bar graph of revenue in total and then revenue without the IRLC. And then next to that, put net income. That's it. Three bars on a graph. Total revenue,
so good.
Revenue without the IRLC, and then net income. And you will be astounded. The line will be twice as big with the IRLC. It is such a huge impact. So I've done a lot of research, a lot of reading on this, and PhDs have proven that graphs are better than just numbers alone. That's not really
so
a
true.
Question. The question is, why aren't they used more? I think it's likely that graphs will improve human interaction. We know that that's
yep.
going to be the case. Just as AI strives to create this digital connection, which I'm very interested to hear about next. So thanks, Dave.
Yeah, it's a good job. It's the connection between something we know to be fact and taking action. It's underscored to smoking. There's so many studies that know you smoke, it increases your probability of lung cancer, if all these respiratory issues, and yet you see people still smoking, especially when it comes to presentation of data. I am one of these guys that loves graphics. You and I both have dyslexia to a certain degree. And we look at how numbers go across a spreadsheet. And I love how you present numbers. And it's such an important point. So anyone on the financial side of the business looking at presenting numbers, get a hold of Andy Schell. He has got it down. I kind of helped train him a little bit. Andy, could you add some colors and rows and do this? And so you did a masterful job when we were working together on a lot of those things. So appreciate it. Makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Andy. Looking forward
Thanks,
to having
Dave.
You participate in the Hot Topic segment. Get a hold of Andy Schell at Dr. Schell. It's all spelled out at mbs-team.com.
Check out my website, drshell.com.
Oh, yeah. I was over there looking at it. There's a lot of good information. Check it out, folks. Appreciate it. At this point, for those of you listening on a downloaded basis, you just want to move on to the next podcast because we're going to get into the Hot Topic segment. This will end this week's market update and all the news that's going on. But for you listening live, stay right here because we're going to get right into the Hot Topic segment. So good to have you with us, everybody. Excited to get into this Hot Topic discussion. This all really started with, of course, Mr. Technology himself, Alan Pollack. When he was working at Pfizer, he invited me to speak at a conference, and I was so honored by that. And while I was there, the chairman of Pfizer walked up on stage, folks, and he says, I want to show you the future and listen and just get ready. It's such an important thing for you to know and see what's available to you. And he says, hey, Sophie, I just want to know what's in my bank accounts. And up pops this digital human that was so live and so emotionally connecting. And she says, your bank accounts are this. You got this much money in this account. And he said, by the way, Sophie, how much did I transfer to my son, Ben, at college? Last month, you hear this, pretty soon, you transferred to Ben last month, $1,100. Does Ben need some more money? Yes, Sophie. He's asking for some more money. Well, over the last few months, you've been paying this, and you only sent him $1,100 last month. You may want to increase it. Okay, so if you go ahead and transfer to his bank account another $400, so we have him at the $1,500, and then remind me about that next week. She says, thanks. Is there anything I can help you with? But the most important part is I watched this engagement, logical, normal conversation with this digital human up there and the humor that came across. It was so engaging. And as he ended up his segment, he says, this is the future. It is here now. And so we're excited to have the company. It was called FaceMe.com back then. Today, they've rebranded their name. They moved from New Zealand to here, Austin, Texas. And joining us today on the Hot Topic segment is the president and founder of Unique, spelled U-N-E-E-Q, Danny Thompson.
Thanks, David.
All right, good. So it's so good to have you here. And also joining you is Tyler Merritt. He's vice president of the platform at Unique. I am excited to get into this disruptive new technology and talk about how we can form digital emotional connections, increasing our customer experience. So it's so good to have you here. And Alan, thank you so much for introducing me to this company. So let's get into defining for our audience, what is a digital human? Please help us out. I've seen it, and we're going to encourage people to go check out the website, but describe, what is the best definition for a digital human?
Yeah, and firstly, thank you, David, for the opportunity to be on the podcast. It's been fascinating just listening to some of the earlier conversations, obviously teeing up a lot of relevance to what we're going to talk about. And funnily enough, I think the Fiserv story, the craziest thing about that is, in hindsight, I should have made it a video, but we did that all live. So it was real-time, live demo. So anything could have happened. And so you can imagine sitting there in that audience of, I don't know how many of us were there, thousands, right? And you're just hoping that it goes well. Obviously, it went phenomenally well. And it was great to hear you tell that story because, yeah, it was a pretty cool night. But what was fascinating about that is a lot of people came to us afterwards and they said, so what is a digital human? And so we showed them, obviously, Sophie is really a visual representation of what most of us know as chatbots. So it's artificial intelligence. But in the same way that we heard Dr. Shell actually talk about the difference between seeing numbers on a page and graphs and the visual interaction, is the same thing we noticed when we put a human element on top of a chatbot and created an interface that was more emotionally engaging, more conversational, and in many ways, just more visual, more connected to the visual elements. Very much became to us and many now in the market that the evolution of conversational artificial intelligence was going to move this way. And it was going to matter to us because as humans, we love that visual interaction. It makes things more engaging and easier.
That is so true. Alan, please jump in. We're going to get all the regulars on the podcast involved in this because I know as we start talking about this, it really kind of stirs up just all the possibilities and also, quite frankly, some fears. And one of the fears I want to dispel very quickly is, does this mean that we're going to be replaced? In any role you have, does that mean you're going to be replaced? And the answer is unequivocally no. And I've gone through this myself, looking at it, at the possibilities. But Alan, you ran a major project when you were at Fiserv working with what is now Unique. Talk about that, and what are some of the things you learned out of that experience?
That you can take what is complex, David, and put it into a script and then build a conversation around it. And what's really difficult is building the conversation because you need to be able to speak to a digital human and say, wait, can you step backwards or can you give me more detail on that? And the digital human, it has to be able to understand different dialects and different ways you say different things. And there's a lot of technology and there's a lot of architectural sort of programming that goes behind the scenes. But to create that experience really takes a lot of work. But once it's done, it works really, really well. So Danny, maybe you want to talk about that a little bit and what goes into really putting that together.
Yeah, I think we often use this term augmentation because we believe that in most of the cases we see this technology really thriving, it's more about the fact that you can capture the best experience or even thinking about your best employee and recreating what they do really well and providing that at scale because it's impossible to scale them. And so being able to do that, you have to capture what they do well. And to do that, you need to break down the process and I guess the problem that they're solving. And in most cases, it's people asking questions. If you think about, say, loan origination or mortgage origination, you know, there's a range of questions and concerns that people have. We all have different backgrounds and capabilities. And it's through that that you really spend time understanding what are the most common questions, what are the most common problems people have, and then you go to your experts in your organization, you come up with ways of really creating answers that are meaningful and helpful. And once AI's got that under its belt, it can do it day in, day out really, really well. And so then you think about, wow, we now can make this accessible 24/7 to anyone, and even in multiple languages. And so that's really how the augmentation works well.
Alan, when you were looking at the project you were working on, is this something that was on the lending side of the business? I believe it was, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, the example that I had set out to do with Danny and his team was to know your borrower, know your customer, and be able to work with them through a process within online banking, but more importantly, to help them understand their purchase or refinance needs for a mortgage loan, and to use information that you either collect through conversation or that you already know about them, and to be able to furnish a conversation that builds trust and walks them down the path as the best loan officer. And the example that we put together, really what it did is it created a workflow that asked all of the necessary questions up front, provided the ability to allow the borrower to ask questions as well, and then walk them through a visual orientation, including a face-to-face conversation of that refinance process. I was amazed at how you can program and create using natural language processing and different technology to create that experience. And then Danny and his team were able to connect to different APIs on the back end that were able to get data at the same time. So when you think about being able as a loan officer to talk to a borrower, you can only do one or two things at a time to maintain your train of thought. This is something that can perform multiple tasks in parallel and receive information that you would never be able to receive within that same time frame, and even sometimes be as accurate.
That's amazing.
So it's really a unique process.
Yeah, Tyler, I want to get you in on this conversation and start talking about, what does this problem solve, Tyler? What are we really looking at when you look at digital humans?
Thanks so much, David, for having us. And you guys are doing a phenomenal job positioning what we're doing. I'm just in awe at how much of an impact this has had. For businesses, the last 10 years, even before that, has been all about automation, right? In order to cost save, in order to speed up the process and grow, we've had to automate. And we've automated so much that we've automated the human out of the process. And now you have large consultancies and large brand organizations talking about the human experience. That's really right. Become a buzzword. And COVID has only exacerbated that, because we've been cut off unceremoniously from one another. And people are realizing how much they've lost in just having social interaction. So Gartner back in 2015 said by 2025, 85% of interactions between customers and businesses will be automated.
Wow.
And that leaves only 15% eye contact, right? And just to put it in context, my grandfather was a realtor, and I spent half my childhood in Pensacola. And in the South, he taught me, when you meet someone, you shake their hand firmly, you look them in the eye, right? And that is how you kind of establish your rapport with that person, whether it's a friend, a professor, a customer. It's just something human, very, very necessarily human, to have that face-to-face interaction. And that's what this solves. We've lost the human element from a lot of these processes. And Unique is about ejecting the personality back in that process, right? We're trying to put the human back into an automated world, which is necessary, right? But we are solving for this emotional deficit that has been created in the pursuit of automation. And to your point earlier, this is not about replacing anybody's jobs. There's so much work to go around. Why would we as a company focus on taking from one and replacing with what we have? We're trying to inject humanity into a space where it's been lost. And that's very, very important. It's difficult to quantify in the typical ROI, TCO kind of financials conversations, which is why people are still wrapping their minds around how important it is to have that emotional connection. That's how trust develops, right? Without that eye contact, how would my grandfather ever have sold a single home in the South without being able to look somebody in the eye, right? This is who you're doing business with. So if brands want to have a brand ambassador and they want to have an emotional connection with the people they serve, this is very necessary.
I'm so excited about it. I want to get over to Matt for a minute. And Matt, I'm looking at your website. And again, I'm looking at how much data is there. How cool would it be to have a digital human on there calling your attention to some of the specifics and giving a quick update on the latest market data? I mean, it's just the possibilities of this is amazing, especially when you're dealing like with what you and Andy deal with, and that is just copious amounts of data and information. What are your thoughts?
Do you know where I could find a digital human like that, and how much would they work for?
Yeah.
I wanted to jump in on that, actually, Matt. I would love to talk to you because we have been working with a company that distills financials directly from a database into language. And so, believe it or not, the problem that you're describing, we have a solution for. That's how new this is that people are still not aware of it.
But it definitely is clearly going to be where things end up going in the future, because I can think just in my own experience running this site that there are, if I knew how to code it and if I had the wherewithal to do the tech side of it, I could definitely write some sort of logic that would inform an automated response based on the thousands of responses I've given to the same questions over the years. So it just makes total sense from a logical standpoint. And it's definitely something that would help my website. And I think a lot of other websites that attempt to distill information that was previously thought to be too specialized and too proprietary to ever be automated.
You're exactly right.
This is what artificial intelligence unlocks as well. It's the ability to allow data to speak now through user interaction. And that's something that's very new, but in the next 3 to 5 years, that's going to become a new standard. And I think that's where you see the fact that we've built so much data and back-end process, and the advancements now in digital humans and AI technology will surface that in just standard conversation. So business intelligence, insights, market trends, all those things are going to become one question away to a good answer.
It's so fun as you start looking at the possibilities. Andy Schell, Profit Doctor, you start listening to the potential, especially when you hear there's a product. Man, that lines with you. And right now, that's not something out in the future, Andy Schell. That's here now.
Hey, Danny. Hey, Tyler. I have two questions. When will AI be able to hear dialect and actually respond correctly? And then the second part of that is that when it doesn't respond correctly, or you realize that you're in an AI loop, and how do you get out of it once you're in it if you don't want to be there?
The evolution of particularly natural language understanding, which is part of the biggest problem you're talking to, it comes down to design as much as anything, and the way that you're effectively trying to take a customer on a journey. And if it's poorly designed, that's how you create loops. It effectively means you haven't really thought about false positives or anything like that in your design element. And naturally, I think that's where Alan was talking to. It takes an investment of time in both design and then architecting and then obviously the execution to avoid that. And we've seen examples where that's done incredibly well. And then we've got examples which are really quite wide in scope. So if you think about like Alexa or Siri, there's few things that they do very well, but many things that they don't. And that's because right. The general intelligence or the scope of what they're trying to, I guess, solve for is still quite far out of reach. And it will take more time. I think we've seen some interesting developments from Facebook and others around training across major size data sets. And with that has enabled their accuracy to understand what you are asking to be very high. In fact, to simulate a human response better than anything I've seen before. So I don't think we're that far away. To really get specific, when you understand the process and if you have a narrow domain of what people are going to be asking, you can design for that today and do a very effective job. Like you'll be up in probably the low 90s of accuracy around what's going on. And then you can deal with the exceptions through design as well, right? So you can always bring support, people, humans, other things into helping with that.
All right. That's very exciting to hear. So my son's an originator, and he was telling me that he has the same conversation with 20 different people every week. And so it's just over and over and over and over and over. You just run through the spiel and get the application moving.
Yeah.
When can this replace that so that the originators can talk about product selection and more advanced things than just gathering data?
Today. 100% what you've just described is the business problem we exist to solve. We exist
wow.
to have that repetitious conversation right now to free up knowledge workers like your son to talk about things that they need to inject that ideation into. You were describing factual-based responses versus advice, right? We're not going to replace
yes.
lawyers or doctors or anybody who needs to sort of infer a future state of the world with the current state of AI, but we can absolutely unburden them from explaining the things that they have to explain continuously, which in the mortgage field is a huge drain on resources, right? It's a multi-billion dollar drain with the fact that there's low literacy. Our financial literacy and our health literacy in America is not as high as it should be. So explaining concepts like what is APR versus APY, these are things that people need to know. And that's what a digital human can do very effectively because there's no judgment, right? When someone wants to ask that question to your son, they may worry, is he going to think I'm stupid? That's a common experience for all of us. We keep our mouths closed. That's a problem.
Well, that's a great point.
And a digital human doesn't judge. So ask the question 50 times, 50 different ways, and it will give you a thorough response. And people can feel more relaxed and more free to educate themselves because they're not going to be judged.
I want to learn more.
You can go to digitalhumans.com. Or if you type in unique, UNEEQ.com, it'll redirect you to digitalhumans.com. It's amazing you guys landed that URL. So kudos to you on that, Danny and Tyler. I think it's important to inject at this moment, Tyler, you were actually in the mortgage business. You understand the mortgage lending process. So we have a friend and someone familiar with this.
Right. I was working for a company that did lending for mortgages, but I worked at a company. It wasn't my own company. And so, yeah, I am familiar with the process. It's been a few years since I worked there. So my knowledge may be a little out of date, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, the point of it is we have a company with the technology that is now. That's why I said at the beginning of the program, folks, we're meeting the future. You can get a hold of this company right now, Unique, and start working on it now. And here's why this is so important. Somebody who's listening to this podcast is already writing this down. I'm getting text messages right now, folks. They're saying, I want to learn more. Don't give their website. Just send it to me. They're wanting to lock this up because this is a game changer. It is going to have such a powerful impact. Let me give you an idea just how much it is. My brother used to have an investment banking firm, also had a venture capital firm. And they were looking to invest in a company like this 12 years ago. And they ran a test. Would someone rather talk to a human or a digital? And there was a lot of doubt. Why would someone want to talk to a computer? I think it was 86% of the time they preferred the computer because of the words you brought up, and that was a lack of judgment. So what I want to go next with this is I want to start getting into proper boundaries. We started touching on this basically, but what is realistic expectations today? Where we could actually see this. We got a mortgage listing industry. So if you could make it as specific as possible to the mortgage industry, that'd be great.
We've got customers today in the US and in Australia, New Zealand, and Europe, and they're using this in this particular industry. And one of my favorite clients is a digital-only bank, and they focus the majority of their businesses around mortgage origination. And so if we think about today and really what's viable, they're focused on particularly around the issue of questions that people have when they're coming through a digital website. And they're trying to understand some of the questions that may not make sense to them. And so there are typically about, I think in their world, I think there's about 160 very common questions that they get day in, day out that's coming through the website. And so they've got what they created was Mia. She's on the website and she can help. The bank's called UBank. It's part of National Australia Bank. And they're amazing. They're growing at 400% year on year on new business. So this technology is really working well for them. The second part that they then focused on was, I don't know about you guys, but I hate forms. And so they're really using this technology now to try take out the form process wherever they can. obviously there's regulations and compliance requirements that prohibit this particular industry and getting rid of them completely, but there is a process to the application, and even they're doing some of the KYC around this now and using the digital human to fulfill that. And I think those two particular requirements and helping with frequently asked questions and also helping remove some of the, I guess, the painful form completion process is always a good thing. So that's where we've seen it be most successful.
Wow. Very exciting.
I wanted to bring up the work we did for the COVID-19 thing. We took the CDC's information and we put it into Sophie's brain. And we had just a phenomenal conversion on people asking the things that they were most concerned about. One of these questions was, can I get COVID from my dog or cat? And then can I give COVID to my dog or cat? This was a frequently asked question when we were looking at the analytics. It shows that people, there's humanity in all of us, of course, and people are very concerned about, you know, their families. And we think of families as other humans, but a lot of people, that love in their hearts extends. And so it was quite interesting to see that that was a major point of concern. So we get to serve the customer's question, right, with a great answer coming from a reputable source. But we also get to look at the analytics and figure out what's important to people. And that's another real part of the conversational AI space, is that the thing about sending a survey, how did we do? That's on the back of the truck looking where you've been, right? But we want to be in the driver's seat looking where we're going. And so analytics are going to really change with the adoption of conversational AI, because you'll know in the moment what people are asking and why that matters. And companies like in the mortgage lending business will be able to pivot their messaging on advertising, on websites, how you talk to people on the phone. You will know what those top 10 questions are and how they'll change over time, right? So that was a very interesting work that we did just in the past few months. And that website's still up. You can go to digitalhumans.com and there's a link there to go to our COVID subsite. It's very, very cool. Check it out.
Very cool. I went there. I was just amazed about it. And before we get too far, I want to say there's an event coming up July 14th. You've asked me to participate in. I'm very excited to do so, from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. Central Time. It's the Digital Humans Day. And so you can get more information, folks. So check it out. Go to, again, digitalhumans.com. As you come into the website, it'll be at the top and you can click to register. So it's something we need to be looking at. And I want to go back to the here and now parts of this thing. I know you're going to get phone calls out of this and they're going to start saying, okay, what is the process and how long does it take? Is it hundreds of thousands of dollars and months, or is it a lot less and both the money and time?
The COVID demo that Tyler referenced, we had a very short period of time. So we were able to stand that up in 2 weeks. Now, that was very fast.
Did you say that in two weeks?
Yeah, we did that one in 2 weeks. It's definitely the fastest we've done it. But what I wanted to reference with that was, because the CDC already had a whole lot of data that we could use, we were able to train very quickly on that. Now, we weren't at full optimized experience. It took another 6 weeks after that. We really optimized. We learned what people were asking. We improved it. But yeah, in the first 2 weeks, we covered a good 60 to 70% of what people were already asking and needing. And then we just optimized right up to 90 plus now on that COVID demo. And people can experience that for themselves just to see time frame, what could you achieve? And we've kind of got through a point now where we're seeing traffic reduce. I think a lot of people are now aware of COVID. Our approach was take away judgment and help with health literacy and just inform people. And so there was a time where there was a lot of misunderstanding, misinformation on COVID. So we really wanted to use it for that. Now it's probably becoming a little less relevant, and that's just the purpose of that particular demo. But the nature of our customers and what they need to look at, they need to be thinking about an investment, I think, of no shorter than 2 months. So you need to be thinking about 8 weeks. And a very small team you probably could do with some content experts. You're going to need a developer. You're going to want to have your marketing people involved in that as well. So that's really to get a proof of concept and something really running well. In 8 weeks, that will be very effective, and you'll be able to really grow it and build it from there.
Wow, that's amazing. Alan, jump in on this expectations discussion. What should, based on your experience, what's your thoughts?
Well, my experience is different because we were building something new and it goes back a little time. Plus, Danny, I think I drove you and your team a little crazy, but it was a lot of fun. But Danny's right. And I think it's so important because there was a point where we had a live working demo and we were showing thousands of people together and it worked in noisy crowds, which was really unique. And what's kind of funny is some of the most popular questions I even fielded was, can you make it look like my brand, my organization? And that's something, right? So you want to continue to expand your brand as a lender. You want to be the assistant for your loan officers or the first face that somebody has on a Sunday when they're at an open house or they're home and they want to ask a quick question. There's so many uses for a digital human, and the technology is so powerful. So the answer is yes, you can get out the door. It could be quick. It could just be simple questions. It doesn't have to be a full-blown digital human that can cover an entire loan refinance. It can be as simple as asking specific questions that you have very simple answers for, and then you expand over time. So out of the door, I think Danny and team and everyone's correct. You can get out pretty easy.
Yeah, Tyler, when you and I were talking about this, you were saying that this is something that could, I think, was it a month or two in a fairly reasonable investment? This could be at least have start providing some functionality. Talk about that, what you're seeing others doing, Tyler.
Yeah, there's a lot of chatbots that people have already invested in. We can take that investment as the brain and put it inside our digital human, right? So if there is a huge body of work that's gone into some platform, none of our customers need to walk away from that. We can connect with our open APIs, and I've done it in as little as 2 hours, literally 2 hours.
Wow.
Right? So if you're talking, like in Alan's case, he's building something, as he said, from nothing. Danny's giving a great baseline for approaching it and getting something stood up. And I'm saying if there's a customer out there that already put 3 years worth of FAQ type questions into their chatbot, we can turn the key. And that can become a digital human experience. And when you talk about investment, Digital Human Day coincides very intentionally with a major announcement that we're going to make that's really going to floor people in terms of pricing. So that's quite exciting. I'm not going to give anything away. But when that comes out and people see the actual money, it's a why not investment at that point. So we are not talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars at all anymore. If people want to have this human experience, they can get started very quickly and very, very inexpensively.
Well, I can't wait to start exposing you more and more. We're getting questions in from our audience. One question came in. Ask Danny why he moved from New Zealand, my favorite place on the planet, to Austin, Texas. He says, I love Austin, but man, why? That's one of the questions. So real quickly, we'll get that one.
Look, it's purely about the fact that my wife and I love adventure, and we also were seeing a lot of growth in the U.S. market. So I needed to be here. We're growing our commercial team in the U.S. for the globe, and we keep our R&D and development in New Zealand. But, yeah, very much moving the headquarters for commercial here to Austin, which is a great place, and I love it. I love New Zealand, but we're really loving Austin, Texas. It's a cool part of the U.S.
It is a cool part of the U.S., and we're so glad you're here. This is where we came to, and while I can't wait to get to New Zealand, we're enjoying Austin. One of the other questions that just came in, is there any mortgage companies currently using this, or could we be the first if we get on it right away? That's hilarious.
Yeah, so I'm going to give that one to Tyler. So the short answer is, in the U.S. market in particular, there is a number of customers that have inquired in the recent months, and Tyler is working closely with them. So if someone wants to move really fast, I suggest they need to move quick if they want to be first out in the U.S. market.
So there is some traction already happening. This is not surprising.
There definitely is. I don't want to call out a company by name, but let's say that there are many people thinking about disruption, and we are actively working with a few of them on it. So definitely, if you want to be an early first mover in this space, now is the time.
Now is the time. And best place for people to go to learn more is going to your website. If you give us that information, if any phone numbers and contact information, let's go ahead and get that out now.
DigitalHumans.com. That's where you need to go. We're all available by phone once we connect with you via email. We definitely took that name, Unique, UNEEQ.com, because every digital human is unique, just like all of us are
That's
unique.
It.
So
yeah.
Should be easy to remember. Shouldn't be any difficulty for people to remember those two sites. Definitely come check us out. We'd be happy to take you through a demo, happy to talk about issues facing your business and how we might be able to solve that with digital human.
And Danny, what can we expect to have play out and then have you add to it, Tyler? But Danny, what about Digital Human Day on July 14th? What's going to be going on there?
Yeah, so we're fortunate enough to have a great panel, including yourself and people like Richard Socha, who's Chief Scientist of Salesforce. He's also an investor in our company, but he's going to be doing a fireside chat with me, and we're going to be bringing in some other industry experts that are very much close to the front line of where this technology is going, but also what is it doing today. So really excited about that. And equally, I think we want to also talk to some of the brand elements of digital humans. It's something that we don't talk a lot of. Tyler kind of touched on it. When you think about the world we live in today, you think about Geico Gecko, you think Flow at Progressive, Ronald McDonald. Brand ambassadors are something that I believe is, you know, very much a normal part of our lives, but it's very one-directional. And when we move into this digital world, we're going to find two-way communication a real key part of connecting our consumers and customers with our brand. Digital humans are really effective brand ambassadors. So we're going to spend some time really bringing some key brand people into the panel and to the guest speakers to talk about that aspect of it as well.
That is so exciting. Alan, let's let you wrap this up. And any other thoughts you want to share with us and our listening audience on this topic? You're certainly probably the one that's the most experienced of anyone in our industry on it already. So let you start wrapping this up.
Well, thanks, David. The only thing I really can leave our audience with is that you really need to contact the Danny, Tyler, and team. They just do a fantastic job. The innovation just continues to scream all things possible, and you will be extremely impressed by what they can do. And again, like I mentioned earlier, you don't have to bite off more than you can chew. You can start small. And then as Danny and Tyler said, you can also get out and running pretty quickly. So super exciting. I think you should reach out to them. And Danny and Tyler, I'm also very excited to continue to watch what you guys do and to see some more Sophies come alive. And I wish I could have trademarked Sophie because she was something special, but it sounds like Sophie's expanded into many different industries and uses at this point. But good to hear.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Yeah. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm excited to be participating on that. Again, check out the website, uneeq.com, or just put in digitalhumans.com. I got locked onto Unique, and I love that name, but either way, you'll get right to this website. Check it out thoroughly, folks. Need to learn more about it, and then make sure you register for the Digital Human Day. It's a two-hour commitment, and if you want to learn more, it's a great place to go. It is the future, and the future is now, as we said at the beginning of the podcast. And it's time for you to get on board or be left in dust. Rate of adoption, the rate of disruption that's taking place in the market is just astounding. And you want to be up on top of it. Thank you so much for being here, Danny Tomsett. And I'm so grateful to Tyler for our earlier conversation. I think we're going to start getting you back with some regularity because I really wanted to talk about conversational AI. We wanted to talk about Watson and Google's digital flow and Microsoft, I think it's Lewis, you said, and Amazon Lex, and all these technologies that are contributing into all this. There's so much happening, and I want to make sure our listening audience is up on it. So we're definitely going to have you back, and I appreciate you being here today. Thank you both so much.
Thanks, David. Thanks very much.
It's a real pleasure. Next week, folks, we've got coming back to the podcast, we've got Rajesh Bhatt, and he is CEO and co-founder of Roostify. Really looking forward to it. We pre-recorded this conversation, and there was so much that we could have gone into. We had to pre-record it and edit to get it, just fit it into the time allotment. But I'm really excited to having Rajesh here. You'll love the conversation. Again, very innovative insights into innovation that's happening into the industry, folks. We're so grateful that you took time to listen to this podcast. Share it with others, everyone. A special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, the Community Lenders Association of America, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility RE, Modex, and so many more. Check them all out at our website, Lickin' on Lending. Appreciate you being here. Have a great week, everyone, and see you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.